Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
We've got good news. The world is open again, and people like you, people of faith, are traveling to Catholic sites around the world. Want to travel with exceptional Catholic leaders this fall, next year, or in the future? Are you looking to see specific sites, celebrate traditional Latin Mass, or travel to destinations without vaccine requirements? We are here to help you deepen your faith on pilgrimage. Give us a call at 1-800-842-4842 or visit us online at selectinternationaltours.com. Select International Tours is your pilgrimage company, and we have the perfect Catholic trip for you.
Are you looking to serve God and society? Consider putting your gifts to work as a lawyer. Ave Maria School of Law has been educating faith-filled lawyers for over 20 years. Ave Maria School of Law is committed to training lawyers to use law appropriately around the moral issues of our time. Visit avemarialaw.edu to learn more about integrating your faith with a law degree.
Today, I am here to give you the assurance that I have not forgotten you.
If we want to see the new evangelization become more than just jargon, if we want to see it grow legs and gain traction and change the world, we have got to take seriously our responsibilities as husbands and fathers, and especially as sons of God.
I want to propose to you then that something that our world is desperately in need of in the midst of this crisis is Catholic Christian masculinity.
If you want to be a good father, then bring your children to confession with you.
But I can't get there unless I become a man of ascesis, a man of asceticism, a man of training.
A man not doing penance, a man not disciplined, is not a man.
You guys have upped your game.
You know what, guys? I gotta say, I love this concept of Man Show.
Warning. The Catholic Man Show is about to begin.
Welcome to the Catholic Man Show. We're on the Lord's team at the winning side, so raise your glass. Adam Minahan here, sitting in studio with the David Niles. We have Sir Juan Posada, El Producer of the Catholic Man Show. We have Jim Spencer back. Last week, he did not show up. Luckily, nobody broke in, even though Dave told everybody that we did not have our bodyguard with us. No one broke in. Everything went okay.
Which is only by the grace of God that our lives were spared.
Yes. But luckily, he is back. Jim Spencer, the bodyguard, the logistics manager of the Catholic Man Show. El Jim.
And that's it. That's all the only people that we have.
All
with us
the people
today.
Here in the studio.
Nobody else.
That was
here.
The litany of people. Except we do have the host of the biggest Catholic radio show in the world. With us, Cy Kellett. Cy, thanks for coming out,
well,
coming over,
and
hanging out with
having
us.
Me. Oh, I just unplugged my.
Did you unplug your audio?
Unplugged my earphone as I said hello.
You got so excited.
You said biggest Catholic radio program in the world, but I don't know if you know this, but we're only number three in Japan.
Only three in Japan.
Yeah, you're gonna have to help me with that. I can still hear you though.
Okay, good.
You sound
with your regular.
We
ears.
Actually sound better muffled, huh?
I didn't want to say anything, but we're back,
and we're back.
That's
that
nice,
good.
Too.
That was
huh?
such an unprofessional opening. Well, that was so unprofessional.
Well,
I feel like you guys are not comforting me at all. I'm kind of throwing that out there.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Cy, it's so good to have you back in the studio. It's great to have you here in Tulsa again.
In T-Town.
Yeah. It's very, very nice to be back. The studio is really, really good now. You guys
thank you.
It gets better and better all the time. As a matter of fact, it looks a lot like the Catholic Answers studio now.
I wonder which came first.
I know. I wonder who thought of this. I'm really glad we stole every idea that you did. I feel really good about that.
Oh, man. you know, hey, if you guys can take a little bit of what we've done and make it even better, that's good with me. I'm good with it.
Yes, we haven't made it any better. We've made it exactly the same, but thanks.
If Jesus is cool with it, so am I.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is he cool?
I don't know.
Yeah, all right.
That's the thing. I don't know.
I mean, you're the author of the book.
Oh, yeah. A Teacher of Strange Things, Who Jesus Was, What He Taught, and Why People Still Follow Him. On sale, 2 copies for the price of 1 right now at shop.catholic.com.
Ooh.
Which is not part of the title, actually. I'm just required by the people at Catholic.
It would be a funny subtitle.
To say that. That would be.
There it is.
So the sequel, is it going to be Teacher of Stranger Things? And like maybe that could like,
do a tie-in?
Like rise to number one bestseller just because people think it's about some television show?
Yes. I've never seen that television show.
I watched the first season, maybe the first 2 seasons.
So good, and that why did you name your book after it? But no, the idea is that Jesus doesn't just teach us a way of living morally. As a matter of fact, many of his moral teachings are quite common, but he teaches us a sacramental life of intimacy with God, and that these sacraments are strange, and the things that Jesus invites us to are strange. And if you're not ready for that, I don't think you're ready for the real Jesus.
Yeah.
I don't think you guys listened to any of that because you were getting coffee.
I did.
Coffee
I did
fascinates
listen.
You men more than anything.
What you said there, it reminds me of a line from the movie A Hidden Life. Have you seen that movie yet, Adam?
No.
I haven't seen it, and I've been told
I feel like I have told you at You're least 100 times to see it. And I feel like I've even convinced you that you
to
should
see it.
See
you
it.
Have. Yeah. You have. I do want to see it.
So there's a scene where there's this guy, he's painting. And he basically says, like, I paint a mild Jesus, like a nice Jesus. Someday, maybe I'll have the courage to paint the real Jesus.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
I paint the Jesus people want to see.
Yeah.
You know, and because that's what they pay me to come do. But
yeah.
Someday, hopefully, I can have the chance
to paint a
real Jesus.
The thing is, though, I think when people hear that, often our mind goes to immediately that's because or the reason that the real Jesus is actually a very challenging Jesus is that he's more morally challenging than you have the guts to. But there's actually a lot of people who are willing to embrace the moral challenges. Many of our Protestant brothers and sisters are better at it than I was going to say than we are, but than you are is what I really meant.
Right.
And but it's the courage to follow him into the sacramental life is the it's frightening that a man says to you, unless you eat my flesh and drink my blood, you know, like that's frightening.
Yeah, that is strange.
When you actually encounter the strangeness of that, what is that about? Why is he inviting me into that? And that so I think sometimes we get too caught up in the fact that, Jesus is more morally challenging than your nice Jesus. Well, yes, that's true. But he's challenging on a whole different level as well. That this, if you think that the journey from where you are to a life of intimacy with God is one that does not lead you through things that are strange and difficult, and then you can't make the journey. He tells you what the journey requires.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of people are up for maybe not up for in the sense of they can do it, but in the sense that they want to be morally great.
Mm-hmm.
But there's something also about being sacramentally docile that I think is the real challenge of Jesus. Do you trust me enough to accept this sacramental way of life in which you become me? But when you become me, you become yourself, you know, like
more fully you.
Like you're you. That's how you get to be you. If you're not up for that, well, you
know. Christ reveals man to himself and makes his supreme calling clear.
Boy, you sound like a very great saint.
Yeah.
I
feel like when I say those words, I feel like a great saint.
You feel like a saint. Yeah. Well, you look like a great saint.
Well, let's not go that far.
out by outward appearance.
What he means is like, you look like you've adopted a lot of ascetical practices.
Yeah.
Like,
some that are not so good for your health.
Are you smearing something on your face?
What's going on here?
I can't really tell what that is.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I know what you mean because Jesus in the moral life, when I was younger, and when I was brand new, really, in the moral life, coming out of college, you know, I had a reconversion.
Thanks to me, really.
Committed myself.
Good for you. Nice work.
He was involved.
Yeah. Really. Jesus.
Adam, I'm trying to tell a story over here.
Oh, okay? No. Welcome to my world where I'm trying to tell a story and you interrupt every couple seconds.
But I have interesting things to say.
Okay. Fair enough.
So.
Oh, I also wanted to tell you. Oh, I'm sorry. Were you about to?
That was it, actually.
No, that was it. Sorry.
You know, I had this notion that, oh, the moral life means rooting out mortal sin from my life. You know, if I can stop, if I can just get mortal sin out, right. I'll have, I mean, what else is there to do? I'm going to heaven.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, that's actually true. If you can stop mortally sinning and you remain in a state of grace, you are going to heaven. But that's not the moral life. That's not the interior life, that type of attitude. That's just like the very first step in it. And Jesus actually enters into the very small things in life. And that's where we find the cross, I have found. It's actually not in the big things, you know, in rooting out major sin. It's in the little things where the cross is heaviest, because it's those little things that are personal to you that you often treasure the most, you know, or that you where it's in those little ways where you're most selfish. Yes. And so those are the ones where you have to continually, always going deeper and deeper, one by one, surrender them over and over and over again. And like that's the challenge in the moral. And it never goes away. You know, it will be here until the day we take our last breath.
Oh, geez. I think that when Jesus says, take up your cross each day,
right,
follow me. Mm-hmm. I mean, that most days don't have that many interesting, you know, things that you're going to remember 40 years from now. But the question is, did you take up the cross that day?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But that taking up of the cross is related to faith and the life of grace. It can't just be a kind of stoic spiritual athleticism.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. that's not mm-hmm. the Christian way. The Christian way is to become Christ and mysteriously become ourselves by becoming Christ. And that's a very strange life. That's a life where there are angels and demons around you at every moment. Mm-hmm. And the things that you do that everybody tells you don't matter do in fact matter a great mm-hmm. deal. And that many things have a power and a significance that you can't even guess at in this world. When I talk, sometimes music starts playing. Do you guys ever have that happen? I must be really good at talking.
This is the first time.
Really?
Wow. We're here with Cy Kellett, host of the Catholic Answers Live and the podcast Catholic Answers Focus. And,
yes, right.
And is there another one? Didn't you guys just launch another podcast?
Well, Trent Horn has his podcast, but we don't
like that guy.
Yeah, we don't like that. Okay. Totally. No, we'll be right back. This segment of the Catholic Man Show is brought to you by the Catholic woodworker. Jonathan Conrad focuses on equipping families for battle in the modern world.
We're very excited that the Catholic Woodworker sponsors our show. Everything that they put out is top-notch. It's heirloom quality. It's handmade. Whether it's home altars, crucifixes, or rosaries, they're actually now the producer of the official rosary of the Catholic Man Show. So go check it out.
Yeah, if you use TCMS for the Catholic Man Show as a promo code, you get 10% off all of your purchases. Let's him know that we sent you. He'll continue supporting the show. Go support Jonathan at thecatholicwoodworker.com.
So this is me. I'm supposed to be welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. We were just chatting, and I was like, I'm sure someone will say something pretty soon. Oh, that's me. I need to say something. We're here with Cy Kellett. Having too much fun, being distracted. Yeah, if I was going to be martyred, I'd want it to be a hungry lion.
Oh, definitely. You do not want an old lion with kind of dull teeth.
No.
Or one that's just eaten, you know,
just
kind of
like
fellow
snacking.
No, you want a lion who's committed. Like, I am starving.
Like, that guy looks good.
Yeah, right. Not one that's like, I could probably go for a Christian.
You know,
you want one that's like, I need me a Christian right now.
It's like,
somebody call Uber Eats.
Just like, this is me, you know, like where I'm if I was back in the Colosseum, we're about to be let out, you know, where the lions are, I'd be sitting there like buttering my, like,
exactly.
Like, are you covering yourself in butter? Oh yeah,
I am.
Bacon grease. Like,
right. I am going to be so delicious.
Come on, Mr. Lion, get it around the neck.
Right, exactly.
Like, bite right here. Yeah. Bite
focus
right here.
On vital organs, please. Yeah.
Right.
Where do you have the most blood flow? Yeah.
Exactly. Stay away from my feet.
That's
start at that end.
I think that's not a bad strategy, really.
Wait, this is on the air right now? This yeah. is not yeah. the behind the scenes part.
You know, this is why people listen to the Catholic Man Show. It's the, you know, it's like, this is the meat that people want to know. Like, what is the technique yeah. of being martyred by a lion?
Exactly.
Right. I think
be first.
We give it.
Yeah. Just be first.
Be first.
Don't be the last guy.
Yeah, well, how many lions are there?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, right.
So, we're talking about Jesus, kind of, and we're really just letting the conversation flow, the moral life. Si, what was your, what's your, like, what's your story? Did you revert? Are you cradle Catholic? Like,
Okay, both of those.
Okay.
And I think a lot of times people's stories of reversion, it seems to me, involve like a kind of... frat house behavior in the early 20s, uh-huh. you know, and then I got serious, you know, when the first kid was born or something like that. And I have some of that, but I have a very weird, I feel like my reversion story is a little weird. And it has to do with, I left the Catholic faith for a different version of the Catholic faith that in the 80s, when I was, you know, coming of age, and then in the 90s where I was supposed to be an adult, but I hadn't quite managed it yet. There were, and it may still be out there in a lot of places, but I feel like it was more prevalent at the time, that there was a kind of Catholicism that was not the John Paul II Catholicism. John Paul II?
The great.
That's what I call him.
Yeah.
we were really close. I would just be like, what's up, dude?
Yeah.
Whenever I saw him.
Deuces.
What's up, dude? Yeah. Now I lost my place. Oh, yes. But there was this alternate Catholicism, which was morally far less demanding and was kind of social justice-y. Mm-hmm. Now that I'm saying this, I think this is everywhere now. I actually think it's still prevalent everywhere. So
yeah.
I went for that. You know, and so, like, there's a thing, it's not going to be funny when I say it, but when I say it in front of a crowd, it often is funny, because I'll talk about when I went to live at the Catholic Worker House.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to live at the Catholic Worker House, you know, up every morning.
Is that Dorothy Day's?
Yeah.
Okay.
Feeding the homeless every morning, you know, walking the streets with the homeless mentally ill and all that kind of thing. And then I'll be like, man, I was really a great guy. Like, people will be like, what is up with this dude? But the truth is, and the reason I can say that is because the next point that I want to make to them is I was not a great guy. That life was attractive to me because it was dissolute in many ways. That the way that I wasn't Dorothy Day.
Mm-hmm.
I was a young person who enjoyed certain intoxicants, enjoyed a certain loose moral life.
Right.
And it allowed
you to justify certain behaviors that you enjoyed.
Thank you, Dr. Freud.
Yeah.
You are. Yeah. It was like an off the hook. You're an off the hook Catholicism,
right,
where holiness was more. And I won't say that I wasn't trying in my own limited way to be holy. Like,
sure.
If you had asked me at the time, I'd say, yeah, holiness is very, very important.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't have said chastity is that important. I wouldn't have said sobriety is that important. I wouldn't. What are some other sins? I wouldn't have said, like, well, I don't want to go into all the sins.
Right.
That's one.
Murder?
Yeah.
I mean, that's not...
I was never really into murder.
What's
thanks for going right for that.
What's the virtue of not murdering somebody?
Yeah. But the thing is, there is a kind of violation of that, the thou shalt not kill in egotism, in anger at other people. You know, like when I was... you're probably not supposed to talk about political stuff, but let's just say in the 80s, I hated Ronald Reagan. Hated Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
Like, because he thought ketchup was a vegetable. And, you know, like I was fully convinced by the...
What is it? It's not a vegetable. I mean, like, what is it?
I think it's a Look, I'm looking over here. It's like,
it's a fruit.
Tomatoes are fruits. I mean, I know that's like people like can.
I didn't actually want to get into this conversation, sorry. But I appreciate that because I actually.
Welcome to the Catholic Man Show.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Prescinding from the whole what is a tomato?
Right. Yeah.
And then what is it once it's processed into ketchup? I hated Ronald Reagan because I perceived this kind of capital. I'm an anti-capitalist. You know, uh-huh. Somehow I have a morally more complex view of the world. Right. Than this, you know,
I understand things better than you do.
Stupid Ronald Reagan.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, and, so, you know, that when you say not murder, well, there is a kind of murdering of other people when you value your opinion so much. And I realize this is not actual murder, but it falls under the same kind of sin, which is I know better than other people. I'm smarter, you know, I've got this moral superior. I'm the president of the United States, an idiot compared to me. You know, that's so all of those sins I explored and reveled in and didn't see that they were in conflict with the call of Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I had to have a reversion from. It was not a reversion from a rejection of Jesus or even a rejection of the church, but it was certainly a reversion from what was a practical rejection of the authority of Jesus and the authority of the church. Mm-hmm. So that it was all pretty negotiable for me for a long time. Mm-hmm. That did not in any way prevent me from being racked by Catholic guilt constantly, you know, troubled, anxious, upset. As a matter of fact, I think those are the fruits of that way of living in many ways.
Right.
But now that I'm truly holy. So that it's a very slow process, I think, to recover from that kind of I'm Catholic, but I'm in a different kind of league of Catholic, you know, but that I do feel like that happened in my life. And it does have to do. It has to do with being married. It has to do with having children. It has to do with I worked for a very good bishop for a long time who was quite clear about what holiness meant. As a matter of fact, I remember he told a story one time and I was, as he was telling the story, kind of having the experience of the story of he said he was, you know, a young priest and preaching and teaching in a certain way. And this other priest said to him, "That's great, but when are you going to take Catholic faith seriously? You know, like when are you going to, you know, really just say it like it is as a Catholic priest?" Uh-huh. And I was like, "Oh, is this a story about me, Bishop?" Because like that's what I needed to hear. Uh-huh. You know? So it's that those little small, the Holy Spirit, like sticking a fork in you or shepherding you or however he does it. So that's kind of my reversion. Was that the dullest reversion story you've ever
No.
I feel like I might have put you to sleep with that. But
no, I was actually thinking about it's interesting how every time that people have reversion stories, it seems like something happens in their life where it has to take them out of themselves.
Oh, I had a moment like that.
Really?
I'm so happy you said that because I was actually on the street in a place called the Combat Zone in Boston, which is where it was the prostitution section. And so and you could buy drugs and stuff there. But
were you like looking for a job or?
Yeah, I was. It's like I feel like I could sell those little baggies. That doesn't seem that hard. So there's a freakishly large number of jobs associated with prostitution. And if you've never been in those neighborhoods, it's a very large. Like there's a guy. I don't know if you know this, but there's a guy who stands on the street corner. And every time a woman gets in a car, he writes down the license number of the car. That's his job.
I did not know this.
Yeah. So that they can find this girl if anything happens. This is not because out of concern for the girl. This is a property.
It's a business.
Yeah, it's a business type of thing. There's this young woman there, and we've been working with her. She had a lot of very serious problems. Her boyfriend had a lot of very serious problems, but he was very abusive to her. She was pregnant, I think about 3 or 4 months pregnant, still working on the street, still using heroin every day. And I just went up to her to talk to her, you know, just to keep that conversation going. Maybe she'll go. Yeah, and at that time, you know, she's pregnant. So you do talk about the baby, you know, and, you know, like say things like, you know, maybe you don't want to give up heroin, but if you take a break, if we take you into treatment and you take a break until the baby's born, that'd be good for the baby. And you think these arguments are really good, and I'm talking and she's listening, and a car pulls up and she gets in the car, goes away. She's working. Like, you know, this is a great conversation, but I'm working right now. So can I finish the story?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I went back and I sat in the car, and it was like a powerful something came over me where I really felt, Jesus, you don't have what she needs. And then that would led to, what do I need to have? Have what she needs. Totally.
Relying on yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Well, this is Catholic Man Show here with Cy Kellett. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'd like to dedicate this show to my beautiful wife. It is her birthday today.
Happy birthday, Haley.
Happy birthday.
You get her like a new driver for her birthday or something?
A boat.
A boat.
That's just what she wanted.
Wow, that's so nice.
Yeah, fishing boat.
Right,
it's,
yeah.
With the trailer. New truck to be able to haul the boat.
It's got a remote control. It's real, yeah. It's real nice.
She's so lucky. Did you get her filleting knives as well and some flies?
Box of ammo.
Box of ammo.
Oh, she's
just what
a
she
lucky
wanted.
Woman.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Right size
that's
and
very
everything.
Very thoughtful.
I know.
Very thoughtful.
I know. Here I am.
She really wanted a new pistol.
Christmas is coming up.
I got it for her.
Christmas is coming up. There's still time for the
pistol. I even carry it around for her.
The worst thing on Christmas is when they open the ammo first, because they know what's in it.
Right. He's supposed to. Yeah.
Rookie mistake.
Yeah. No, open that one first.
Man. So we're here with Cy Kellett, host of Catholic Answers Live. Cy, I'm curious, while you're taking on these calls every day, 5 days a week, you get a lot of interesting calls, and it kind of piggybacks off of what you were just saying earlier, is that you don't have what it takes to actually convert them.
No.
So when you're receiving these calls and you get some crazy calls, how do you go about like attempting, outside of just passing it off to the apologist?
Yeah, because you know that's what I do. Yeah. Right.
But how do you get to being able to reach that person, not necessarily answering the question, not necessarily trying to win the argument, but try to win the person?
Well, sometimes my role is to, even after the answer is given, and I remember this just happened recently, maybe a week or two ago, a person with a question about hell, and then the person gets the answer from the apologist, and the answer is perfectly good and solid. But this is something that I do think, like, I always joke about that, you know, I don't contribute that much to the show. And I really don't. Like, I'm not, that's not false modesty. Like, I'm not an apologist. I'm the guy that answers the phones and hands the person off and all that. But one thing I do, I don't say those things to like have a pretend modesty. It's because I know my role, and I will say the things that I'm good at. And one of the things that I do have the talent for is hearing if there's a little something more there that maybe the question needed more. So I just said to the caller, is this, did you call because you're this is an intellectual curiosity that you have, or do you have some anxiety about this? Is there some worry in it? And the poor man was very, very worried about two people who had just died in his life, and he wasn't sure if they were in heaven or hell. He didn't know how to know whether they were in heaven or hell. And I mean, he described them. They sounded like lovely people. I was going to be like, pretty sure they're in. But you're not allowed to do that. You know, like you can't give your opinion on someone else's eternal salvation. Right. You know, but it was me. I'd let him in.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's what I think of as answering the person and not just the question. We do have to answer the question. But the person often has needs, and you know, they framed a question to get an answer, but the thing that they need is some conversation, some assurance, or some help with a you know, this is a real problem in my life. And so I do think being attentive to that and asking a question when it's appropriate, you know, like sometimes it's not appropriate. But I've had people who called and asked about suicide that I felt this person is considering suicide. And I just ask them, you know, is this are you thinking about suicide? Do you have a you know, all the things you're supposed to say, you have a plan, you know, that kind of thing. And then we deal with it. Mm-hmm. Because I, you know, you got to kind of model that. Like with suicide, that's like the one of the worst things to deal with on the air is, yeah, I'm thinking about killing myself. Like that's very upsetting to the listener. It's upsetting to us. Like you're like, you want to say,
don't say the wrong thing.
Yeah, you do. You get this kind of like
anxiety. Yeah.
And then, but then you realize, no, the person called. There's only a few things I can do, but I'm going to do them. You know,
right.
Like when you hang up, call 911. Would you like us to help you call 911? Mm-hmm. You know, there's help for
that. We can conference them in for you.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You know, so it's not like I'm trying to cure anybody, but I do know the next steps. And so I'll help them. But I that's one of those ones where, mm-hmm. like, I think a lot of us, you know, if someone's talking about suicide and we actually feel like this is real, we might, and I might in my normal life, be very shy about going, is this something you're thinking about, you know? Mm-hmm. But on the radio, I don't feel shy about it. I think in part because there's this sense of obligation, you know, like to the audience, to the to not take the easy way out.
Right,
you know?
Sure.
Whereas in life, you might take the easy way out, and that probably wouldn't be the right thing to do. In that case. I don't actually remember what question I was answering now, but am I answering it? Or?
Yeah.
Okay. My attention span is so short.
We don't know anything about that on this
it's
show.
It's so short.
About what?
Yeah. Right. What were we talking about? Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say that's one of those things that's hard to even train for, I would imagine. You know, how do you get ready for that other than just having done it a couple times? And every person is going to be so different.
A lot of it is, it does come from, you know, that I don't have a great deal to do. You know, I don't have to. When the person says, you know, what about this stupid thing that the Council of Florence said? You know, like I'm the guy who goes, there was a council in Florence?
That's a council I'd like to go to.
Yeah, right.
That sounds nice. Yeah. In the spring? Was it in the spring?
Exactly. But, you know, then you turn to Jimmy or Tim, you know, they'll be like, well, that was in the third session of the Council of Florence. In the fourth session, you know, oh, okay. You know, but so there's not a
there
lot.
There were four?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Like, well, if there's a council in Florence, you're going to drag that out. Especially if you're from, like, Germany or something.
Yeah.
Like,
is there anything else we can talk about? I'm sure there is. Yeah, I mean,
right. Have we solved the Aryan thing? Yeah. Well, I can go back to that.
You know
we
what? Let's just go over everything we talked about already.
Yeah. Let's go over everything every other council talked about already. So I can't do all those things. I don't have that kind of memory. You know, people say, well, you like I've had people say to me, actually, Jimmy has said it to me, you know, like, well, you're smart. Like, don't act like you're not smart. I say, it's not Jimmy. I'm not saying I'm not smart. I'm saying I can't remember anything. Mm-hmm. Like, that's two different things. I can solve a problem. You know, I can't actually solve that many problems, but
but
I have solved problems before.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's things like I lost my keys, but and everyone knows the solution to that.
Ask your wife.
Where's my keys?
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I do when I lose something. Honey.
Where's my keys?
Where's this? Whatever. It's amazing. It's incredible that she knows every time where everything is.
But then she tells me where they are, and then I'm mad at her because I think she moved them. I'm like, I didn't leave them there. Why?
That's not where I put them.
Yeah, that's not where I put
them. I would not do that.
Usually, like, I think.
So you think I took your keys from where you left them and put them somewhere else just so we would have this conversation? I think, yeah, you would. You're that kind of person.
Why would I,
you would do that.
You would.
You would.
I think I've seen you do it.
Right.
Usually when I do that and Lady Pamela tells me where they are, I think, I can't believe I didn't look there before I asked.
Yeah, right.
Obviously, they're on the key ring where I put my keys.
Yes.
I'm an idiot.
This is my wife's thing that she says now. Well, she'll go, I'll ask her where something is. She'll go, did you look? And I'll go, yeah, I look. And she'll go, did you look or did you look? Like, because there is the kind of husband kind of looking, which is, I don't see it. Yeah, I'm going to ask her.
Hey, Well, yeah, my way of looking is verbal.
That's right. Right. Yeah. Well, I didn't open the refrigerator. I looked at the refrigerator. Then I asked you if it's in there.
Right.
Again, I feel like we might be digressing. Yeah. I can't remember where.
Well, maybe. So we're talking about evangelization. That's kind of where we've moved. And I do think I have become more and more of the opinion that evangelization almost always takes place in just one-on-one conversation. That real evangelization, the most efficient and effective way to change someone's heart is by just being a friend and being like a regular person who's pursuing holiness and sharing the fact that this is something that's important to you and kind of like having that personal one-on-one witness with them. Like,
yeah,
with, you know, these huge programs that the church can put together, and those have, you know, borne fruit in the past or more to a more or less degree. But really, I think small is powerful.
Well, when those programs do bear fruit, it's usually because they're arranged in such a way as they're inviting people to do just exactly what you said.
Sure.
You know, like if you have a great catechetical program in your diocese and it's big and it's great because you train catechists to do exactly what you just talk about, not because you made every fourth grader come in and, you know, sit and listen to this training.
Right.
But the training sent people, you know, again, that bishop that I work for, he used to say about the pastoral center, this is a place we go forth from. This is not a place where we accomplish the mission. This is where we go forth from. Mm-hmm. So when people come here and they learn, go forth and do it. But I think that you're quite right about that. And I actually think that that's why radio is a powerful medium, because in many cases, you know, it's like if I'm driving to work and I'm listening to Rush Limbaugh, that's a conversation between me and Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah, it does feel personal.
It's an amazing thing that even if I was watching him on television, it would feel less intimate and it's just me and him than... and may God rest his soul.
Sure.
But I use Rush because he's the, you know, everybody knows who
he's
Rush
the radio.
Is.
Yeah, he's right.
I could say some podunk.
Paul Harvey.
Well, everyone knows who Paul Harvey is, too.
Well,
Paul Harvey was incredible.
He was.
I always felt like with Paul Harvey, I got the rest of the story.
Yeah.
You know what I'm
saying?
That's
the thing about him.
If I was like, he always told the story. Well, what's the rest of the story? So.
And then, yeah. But then he would give it to you.
Yeah, he was wonderful. So back to the actual point. But yeah, I do think that radio works that way. And that one of the things that's really fun for human beings, too, is to listen into other people's one-on-one conversations. We love to overhear what other people are saying. And that's essentially what radio is, overhearing, listening to somebody else.
What we're doing right now.
Yeah.
So when we get back, I want to ask you, what are some of the keys that you think for guys to be able to evangelize, to become friends? What are some things that they need to be doing in their personal life in order to reflect that?
Okay.
We'll be right back.
Do you feel like God is calling you to go on a pilgrimage? Well, for the last 34 years, Select International Tours has been leading pilgrimages to holy sites all over the world.
And you want, when you go on pilgrimages, Dave, you want to make sure you have the best hotels, you're touring with the best guides, and every detail has been addressed.
And that's exactly what you're getting with Select International Tours. So, for more information, go to their brand new website, selectinternationaltours.com. They have been a sponsor of the Catholic Man Show for a long time now. Even during the COVID pandemic, they were still sponsoring our show. A lot of other tour companies were really shutting down. These guys were consistent. So go to selectinternationaltours.com to find out more information about all the great pilgrimages they offer all over the world. Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles. Here with Adam Minahan and Cy Kellett. We're talking about Jesus. We're talking about conversion. Before the break, Adam wanted to ask you, Cy, about friendship. What was your question, Adam? Why don't you just ask it?
I knew when none of us was going to remember it. I knew
it was your question.
Oh, yeah.
It's your question.
How do men prepare, like, themselves to be a friend? And to invite them into the friendship with Christ.
Yeah.
Like, what do we have to do to be able to give it to somebody else?
Well, that's the thing, is I think that's the primary invitation of the sacramental life, that it is the sacramental life that makes you into the person who's capable of marriage, who's capable of friendship, who's capable of parenting. I mean, you can do all of those things on a natural level and be sufficient in certain ways. At least cooperate with our nature, we give glory to God because nature gives glory to God, as Psalm 19 tells us. But mm-hmm. but to really do that in the way that God calls us to do, in a way that's evangelical, there's nothing like the sacraments. And I honestly think most Catholics don't believe in the sacraments. Like if you say to somebody, you know, let's say you say to there's some somebody struggling with a virtue, and for now let's choose chastity, right? And there's a lot of things to do to help with the develop the virtue of chastity. But primarily, if you say go to confession, go weekly, go monthly, go what, you know, what mm-hmm. fits with
as often as you need to.
Yeah, yeah, right. Go to confession, receive the Eucharist, sit with Jesus in the Eucharist, let him speak to your soul. You know, are you confirmed? If you're not, get in the class.
Yeah,
get
do
confirmed.
That.
Mm-hmm. You know, like people will think, I think many people think, well, because we have such a therapeutic mindset. Yeah, but what are the things that I need to do? You know, like, mm-hmm. no, those are the things that you need to do because mm-hmm. Jesus is going to do this work or it ain't going to get done. Like right. there's nobody. Saint Joseph, the most chaste spouse of the Virgin Mary, didn't do that on his own. That's the grace of God. Mary herself. It's the grace of God. And so this is actually the real world. The sacramental world is the real world. Now, does that mean, well, that I don't have to, you know, I don't know, put the software on my phone, or I don't have to maybe if it's compulsive behavior, you know, sit in a group, or, you know, a 12-step group or get psych. No, it doesn't say not to do those things. But in the end, the thing that cures you, heals you, makes you whole is the actual sacraments of Jesus Christ. And mm-hmm. when you begin to believe that, I think you unleash the power of the sacraments to some degree because, you know, if you sit with Jesus in the Blessed Sacrament, say, I'm going to go do a holy hour and just sit with Jesus. If you kind of have faith in that, I think that that affects not what Jesus does, but it affects your receptivity.
Right.
But if you have solid faith in that, like he's going to do this thing, like my marriage is a mess and I'm going to do, you know, all these things to work on my marriage. And among them, I'm going to sit with Jesus. If I go sit with Jesus and I truly have faith that he will heal my marriage, he will heal your marriage. Like he's not sitting there like, I'm not so sure. That's
I don't know.
No, he's giving it all. The problem is our receptivity. And I truly believe, and I want to stress this, that the primary preparation for friendship, the primary preparation for marriage, for parenthood, for evangelization is sacramental docility. Make yourself docile to the sacraments. Let them do the work. And it's almost weird because it's Christ doing the work in the sacraments, but he instituted them as sacraments, so we can talk about them as things in themselves and let them do their work.
Yeah.
I feel like I was in my late 40s when one day I realized that my confirmation, which I received at 13, had been effective. Like I realized somehow it came into my mind like a kind of reflection on my life. And I realized, oh my gosh, my sacrament of confirmation was working through all of that. Like that mark made a difference. But I went through my life not knowing it.
Yeah.
You know, not ever having an experience at the level of my own awareness that actually that sacrament saved your life. You know, that right. sacrament saved your life. And so like when I'm dying, I really, and if I'm not awake when I'm dying, which is very likely in my case because you know that I faint, right? Mm-hmm. So at the moment, I would like to be anointed because I know that the power of that anointing
yeah.
saves me. That's my salvation. I want that anointing. I could do everything else. You know, I could dispose myself and I could say, Jesus, I go ahead, let the lion eat me. I want the anointing. You know, because I know that the sacraments have the power. I don't have that power. I can't work myself up into a frenzy of salvation. I can't do anything. But that mm-hmm. get me a priest, let him put a little something on me, mm-hmm. and I am saved.
See, it's sometimes a hard sell for people who are going through a trial like what you mentioned, because they go to Mass, they go to confession. Now, sometimes when you go to confession on the way out, you actually do feel something. Like, you can tell something has happened.
Unless you're like, we all go through that period where you get out of confession and you're like, oh, did I just sin again? I think I just sinned again.
Right.
Like, heading back in.
You're like, why do they let cute girls in the line for confession? I'm walking out. So
walking out and turning right back and going right back in the line.
But you shouldn't do that. No. But when you're not in the throes of some kind of, what's the name for that? Scrupulosity.
Right.
Then yes, you do feel a tremendous relief.
But, if you're going through a trial and you go to Mass, it's people want it to be like medicine, in that I took it and then I immediately 30 minutes later I felt the effect.
Right.
That's just not the way it works, because of, I think, our receptivity, how open, how available are we really making ourselves, because grace builds on nature, like you said. And so, if our nature, if we have mangled ourselves or whatever, so that we're not, of our vessel, if you want to think about it that way, is not capable of holding the grace that's being dumped out on you, then it's just not going to, it's not going to work that way. No. But by dumping the grace, that's going to slowly heal that vessel so that you can become someone who can receive the grace more and more and more and more.
You never know what God's timing is.
Yeah,
right.
But it's not your timing. So that's true. That's an important part of the faith life is time means something different to God than it means to me. Like, to me, this is absolutely urgent now. It seems somewhat ridiculous to me that you have not solved this problem for me, But Paul Claudel, the great French poet, 18 years old, walks into Notre Dame Cathedral, which the modernists have since burned down. I don't know if you know that, but
I do.
I don't like to blame the modernists. Yes, I do. I like to blame the modernists.
I like to, personally.
Big fan.
So Paul Claudel walks into the cathedral, 18 years old, total non-believer, believes in Christ. Just walks in, believes in Christ. That happens.
Yeah.
That happens.
Beauty can reach people sometimes like that.
And Jesus can, Jesus can reach anyone, anytime, anywhere. Like Walker Percy used to have this, the Catholic writer, he used to like to do little quizzes. And there was one quiz where he like lists four people and says which one is most likely to be saved. And it's like, I don't know, like a lesbian woman living in San Francisco, a truck driver who, overweight and whatever. So he describes four people. And then the answer is, you don't know.
Right.
You don't know. Uh-huh. It could be anybody, anytime.
All of the above. Yeah. None of the above.
Right. Yeah. But if you think by looking at a description on a page of another person, that one's probably good. You're an idiot. Stop it. You don't know. And so you don't know when the moment where all of the effects of the sacraments will become apparent to you. And you'll go, all that. I'm in my 40s. I was confirmed at 13 years old, when I have some kind of awareness that sacrament was really powerful in my life. And I don't know why that, God let me see that for a moment. And I couldn't even really describe to you what that mm-hmm. Okay, but what, all those other years the sacrament wasn't working? Yes, it was. It was doing its work. God will make it apparent to you when
mm-hmm. you just didn't have the gift of clarity.
He was pretty clear on it the whole time.
Right. He just didn't want to reveal it to you yet, because he wants us to pursue him, and if he gives you all the stuff, like all the knowledge, the foresight, then it makes it less beautiful, it's like when you tell your wife you love them, or your children you love them, it's more beautiful when it's a total gift that I do freely, right? It's not like something I'm being compelled to do, or I'm overwhelmed to where, So that's how it is with God. He wants us to be pursuing
And there is
him.
Also, I think, the element of even receptivity is a habit. And so it's like the person who's learning to swim. I don't know if you guys remember learning to swim, but I hated swim lessons because they're like, I'm not drowning right now. Why are you telling me that my arms aren't right? Like, I'm clearly not drowning.
Uh-huh.
But they're saying, no, you got to do the stroke like this and turn your head like that. And there's a certain point at which it stops being a struggle and it becomes, I'm swimming. It's just, mm-hmm. I'm swimming. So that's also true in the in the life of grace, I think, in the life of receptivity to grace. I don't think it's true in the life of grace in the sense that the grace is always there. God's pursuit of us is always much more than our pursuit of him. But the habit of receptivity becomes at a certain point, oh, I know how to receive him now. And then you start having temptations. And even in the moment of temptation, the habit of receptivity will get you through it. You'll be like, God, I can't do this. You're going to have to help me through this. I literally hate the person in line in front of me who can't find their checkbook, you know, like,
right.
But then God gets you through it because you've practiced the habit of receptivity.
Beautiful.
Sai, thanks so much for hanging out with us. We're out of time on the radio, but we'll continue on the podcast. So you can go to CatholicMannShow.com to check out this full episode. Go to Patreon.com/TheCatholicManShow to support. Check out Sai's book.
Where
is it? Strange Things.
Why did you mention that?
Shop.Catholic.com.
2 for $1.
$16.99.
$95. It's a deal.
Man.
4 cents off.
What a deal.
We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Cheers to Jesus.
My coffee mug.
Mine's empty, but I'll raise it.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it's not. Look at that. It's a miracle.
just keeps coming.
This is like that oil jar.
Okay, so let's pivot. I want to pivot because I want to ask you a couple questions about just weird things that you hear on the radio.
Okay.
Because I don't get a chance to listen to Catholic Answers every day any longer. I know.
Your commute's just, also like 3 minutes.
Yeah. Like basically 3 decades.
You can get 3 decades?
If I'm walking.
Oh, if you walk.
If I'm walking. I can get through.
Oh, really? It's that quick to walk?
That quick.
Wow.
I love that you can also, as a Catholic, hey, how far is it? Oh, it's about 3 decades.
That's why it's like, you
know?
Yeah, well,
I knew exactly what he was saying.
That's, you know, I've said that before. Well, you want at least a 20-minute commute. You can get your rosary in, I mean.
Yeah. Although I can't because I look at something and I'm like, 15 minutes later, oh, I was on the second beat of the first.
No, what I do is I look at something and then realize like, oh, I'm done.
Yeah, that's good.
Oh. Yeah. Well, got my rosary done. I'm a pretty holy guy.
But I do know that just being on air, you never know, and being live especially, you
right.
never know what you're going to get. You never, like last night when we had our fundraiser
right.
for radio, like we have a live Q&A session, so you never know
no.
what they're going to ask and how they're going to respond to the answer. So what are some of the things that really caught you off guard when taking on a call?
I think one of them I kind of mentioned last night. One of the things that actually takes me off guard is how committed some people are to an absolutist kind of relativism. I know that makes no sense, but you know, like they are true relativists. So you almost can't have a conversation with them. It's amazing to me that you can't. There are people that are so steeped in this relativism that any kind of back and forth becomes just pointless. And it's very upsetting. Like, you know, this round and around about, well, you know, that everything. I told the story last night about the person who, you know, we asked this woman who was very, very pro-choice if it was wrong for the Nazis to kill Jews. And she said, well, not wrong from their perspective. But we were like, but that's not the question we're asking. We're like, in an absolute sense, was it wrong? And she never got there. It's not like there's no point at which a person goes, well, yeah, clearly it's wrong to kill Jews. Like there's people that you can never get there with.
I mean, like Hitler is obviously like so in our society,
yeah.
Hitler is viewed as like the worst person that there is.
Right.
And so if you can't even say like, yeah, that guy sucked.
Yeah, yeah, right. That was bad.
That guy was totally the worst.
But no, but she's trying to argue with us. Well, you have to see it from his perspective. And I'm like, I actually don't have to see it from you. I'm one of those weird people who actually read Mein Kampf. That is a book of idiocy. You'd have to be an idiot to write a book like that.
Really?
It's more wrong. Like, I thought it was going to be like, you know, have some mesmerizing. I was like, this is the stupidest drivel. But So I don't really need to hear.
I mean, of course, anymore. You don't speak German, so that's probably. That's,
oh, is that what it was? So when
it's just totally incomprehensible. Like, I couldn't.
Does this guy can't even spell. Right.
Yeah. Sounds like he's shouting, though, from the book.
The book is really loud, but spelled poorly. I find that the weirdest thing of, like, where did you go to college? Like, it's taken years of education for the person to become that much of a relativist, because it's unnatural. Mm-hmm. It's right. It's not natural to be a relativist.
I think I do think it's a self-defense mechanism for a lot of people, not maybe for everybody, but you know, like, there are things that they need to rationalize in their past or just behaviors,
or you're walking them down a logical
committed, like, to, because obviously you don't need to make great arguments to get someone to agree that killing people is wrong.
Objectively, right?
I mean, that. And if you can't do that, then there's something wrong with you've mangled your own intellect, I think it's a self-defense mechanism in a lot of cases, where just they're committed to a certain behavior and they've had to rationalize things and give up intellectual ground in order to make sense of these things in their life. But, you know, like, the relativist attitude makes virtue absolute. There is no virtue in a relativist mindset. I mean, can you think of any virtuous act? If everything is relative,
then there is value.
Tolerance.
I mean, maybe from your perspective.
Not from Hitler's perspective.
Not from Hitler's perspective, you see?
I found him to be quite intolerant. I don't know if I know the whole story, but to me, he seemed quite intolerant.
I mean, one thing I'll tell you, he could not handle milk, okay? I mean, it's like, that was a severe intolerance that he has.
Well done.
Thank you.
David Niles. Well done. Lactose intolerant. Hitler was lactose intolerant. I mean, that's where you went.
He was. I mean, that's how intolerant he was.
Right.
Maybe that's why.
How he handled
maybe that's why he hated people so much. He's like, I am so intolerant. I see you drinking milk.
I can't do it.
I hate you. Yeah. He's just mad that they could drink milk and he couldn't.
Yeah. All right. And started yelling. Started yelling stuff out and people followed him.
Yeah.
Boy, world history with David Niles.
I do think you're right, though, Dave. I do think when somebody sees a logic, like, you're being walked to a logical conclusion.
Yeah, then the defenses go up. I think you're right.
Yeah.
And especially when you see someone, you know, like, when you're having just a calm, rational argument, and all of a sudden they're getting emotional. To me, that's a cycle. Mm-hmm. That's a trigger that it's a psychological reaction to their rationalizations being confronted.
I think that that's right, but I have to say one of my problems in life is moderating my own emotions when people say certain things. Like, there's this, I don't know if you know about this, but there was this archaeological discovery that there were no camels in Israel in the time of Abraham. And so the Genesis stories in which Abraham has camels, people say, see, the Bible is not true. And then they get really smug about it, and they actually... one of the characters on this TV show, what's the one with the scientists? The Big Bang Theory.
Oh, uh-huh.
He explains to someone that the Bible's not true because of the camels. And then this stuff seeps into the culture, and people, that Bible is just a bunch of, well, it's a stupid story. First of all, just because you didn't find a camel bone doesn't mean Abraham didn't have a camel. Like, Abraham's camel could well have just, you know, decomposed completely. But then there's also...
Even he might have brought it from somewhere else.
Well, that's the other point. He's not from here. He's from where they had camels. Uh-huh. Like, so... But also, this is not evidence. This is just a... Okay, so the society of the Levant doesn't have camels until after the time of Abraham. That's an interesting fact. That says nothing about the, like, if to an honest. So I actually, when you say your emotions get up, that's a defense mechanism. My emotions get really up at those times. So I'm sympathetic to the person who's like,
that does happen to me too sometimes. Yeah, like, but mostly it's like the thing that you're saying is so, like, I get frustrated with their obstinacy. Yeah, you know, like, you won't even.
Yeah. I hate that, because I think my feeling is there's like millions of teenagers watching this TV show right now. And you're at this moment one more notch in their distrust of the Word of God, you know. And mm-hmm. I don't have to say Word of God. I can say Bible to them because they don't believe it's the Word of God. But, oh.
Yeah.
And then my wife would be like, it's a TV show. Why are you so upset? I'm like, where are my keys?
That's not where I put them. That is not where
That's
I put
not
them.
Not where I left them.
You know I didn't put them there.
Why are you getting so upset?
Because! Because Abraham had camels, okay? Anything else you got?
No.
It's always a pleasure to have you on, Si. Thanks so much for hanging out with us.
I feel like you guys are very tolerant of me. I feel like you have so many really with it people, and then I just kind of make smart-ass remarks. I feel like you guys are very tolerant of me. Thank you.
Well, that's because...
That's
That's what?
It's Advent.
Yeah. Oh, penitential season, yeah. So, being Advent. So.
Very holy, man.
Yeah, we're just trying to, like, really grow in holiness and stuff. I told you, you know, I've been working on trilocating. I'm pretty close, yeah.
Yeah. Are you, you're up to one, right?
Well, obviously I can bilocate.
Oh, you can bilocate.
Right.
Obviously.
Yeah.
But. Actually, you know, bilocation's not possible.
Oh.
That's what St. Thomas Aquinas said.
Well. Maybe he was jealous.
He said nothing about trilocating.
Yeah. That's a good point. Man, you got me there. I'm just not a philosopher of your level.
Right. I mean, it's like, can a triangle have two sides? No, it's not possible.
Of course not.
That doesn't mean triangle can't have three sides.
Oh, my gosh.
That's airtight argument right there.
I didn't even realize
that argument is airtight.
That is airtight. That's exactly. Yeah, that is.
Bring us on the show. Bring us on Catholic Answers.
Well,
I think I might be a mystic. I heard him say something about triangles, and then it's like, I think I'm floating.
I know, right. Like Padre Pio. Like,
yeah.
Didn't he go up in the sky?
That's why every once in a while you'll just see me kind of do
bombers
this.
Away?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I had kind of a debate about this with my wife recently. Was that because until recently I didn't know that like levitation was something that was common between many saints. I thought like, oh, that's St. Joseph Cupertino's thing. No, it turns out
he did it long distance. That's why.
Right. Yeah, like
and far.
There's a lot of them who have been able to do that, which I had no idea. And she said, well, St. Padre Pio did it. And it's like, okay. I'm not sure. I don't think that he was I don't think he was flying. I think it was more something of bilocate. Because I doubt he's like chilling down on the ground. And then he's like, hey guys.
See ya.
I gotta go.
Bombers.
Yeah.
I gotta go somewhere. You know, and like put his hand up like Superman. It's like, I'll be back. I feel like he probably more appeared in the sky.
That's what Thomas would say about bilocating. Is that bilocating is actually... The person is physically in one place and appearing in the other place. So it's not actually the physical person who's in the other place.
I wonder why he, like...
Had to bring that up.
Yeah, like...
Why Thomas did?
I wonder why... What? I'll have to go... Is it in the Summa? Do you know where it is?
No. I don't know. I know Father Hugh told me.
I can Google it. I have the Google. Can look it up. But, yeah, I'd be interested to know why he made that distinction.
Thomas did a lot of interesting things.
And like a lot of times it's like, why are you doing that? And then I read it, it's like, oh.
Well, yeah, but always the thing is so much of it comes back to he's holding some truth about Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. And you gotta, all these other things have to be true in order for this to be true about. So, you know, like the quantity of the body of Jesus Christ is in an actual place. And it's always in an actual place because
right.
it's an actual body.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So then how do you explain the Eucharist? If the quantity of his body is not there in the Eucharist, but the substance is. Well, Thomas can explain that, but I don't think
go read
this
Summa.
But the point is, Jesus is actually somewhere, and you he's not like you're not chewing on him and like cracking his bones when you're eating the Eucharist. And that so Thomas talks about how a body can only be in one place at one time. It cannot be in two places at one time.
Quick story to end on that. Today we were in Mass in the morning, and when they're doing the consecration, I go to my son, my 4-year-old. There's Jesus and he looks looking at Jesus, and then Father breaks it, and he looks at me and tells me, "Well, Jesus just got brought in half."
So things aren't. Today's not a good day, you know.
jeans just got broken in.
One time my wife and my kids got back from Mass, and I said, how was Mass? And my daughter Mary, she's like, good. And I said, was Jesus there? And she goes, yeah, Mom ate him.
She's like that.
I was a little shocked, but you just bit right into him.
Yeah.
But with the body thing, okay, so like, you know, Mary, she appears. She was assumed into heaven, body and soul.
Right.
So when she appears, my presumption is not just an allocution, you know, it's not just like a vision or like a, you know, a ghost, but that she's actually there appearing. Maybe she is, maybe she isn't, but that's just like, let's just say she is.
Yeah.
Well, she's also outside of time at this point, and so...
Well, is she?
Well, she's in heaven, right?
Yeah, but heaven has time.
It's a different time.
Yeah.
She's not linear.
I mean, like, couldn't she appear to the apostles? Like, maybe the glorified body of Mary appeared to the apostles before she died, right? But it wasn't Mary in her current state appearing, but it was the future glorified version of Mary coming back, like...
Well, Mary, there is actually one Marian apparition when she was still alive.
On the pillar or something?
Out in
James.
Spain.
To comfort James.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so what was that? Was it a vision? I mean, was it one of the, like, Padre Pio with the airplane? Like, I don't think we know. I really don't think anybody knows. But
Jimmy Akin does.
What's possible, certainly possible, is Mary can physically be here and... then physically be there in
Spain.
Or at
least appear.
But that's a different possibility. It's also possible she's still physically present here, wherever she was, Ephesus maybe, and she appears to James in Spain or wherever he was. Or another possibility is that the Holy Spirit just enlightens the mind of James to make his mind aware of Mary, who's all still over here. And I mean, who knows what it is? But I think my sense is that in some, like when she meets with Bernadette, for example, like, don't you get the sense that she was physically there? I mean,
that's how I do. Yeah,
I do. But I mean, lots of people have an experience of Mary that's clearly not Mary physically.
Right.
Present.
Right.
So different levels for, I would think. But I don't think the glorified body, I really don't think, David, that the glorified body of Mary can go back in time and appear to the apostles.
Interesting.
That would...
So in heaven, is she like moving along at the same speed as us in time? Because I didn't think that she was.
No, but I think time... I mean, this is probably the true Catholic answer. Yes and no. You know, like, I think yes and no. Like, we don't understand what time is like in heaven. But there... Because she has a physical body and Jesus has a physical body, there has to always be potency and act. And as long as there's potency and act, there's time. Because the only way that potency can become act
is
cross time. So, I mean, I don't know what that time is like.
Right.
I don't even know, like, how many dimensions they live in. I don't know how many, like, dimensionally, Jesus has a dimensional body. Is it three-dimensional? 20-dimensional? I don't know. Like, we don't know that.
Hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. To me, I've just always thought of her as being like, oh yeah, I mean, she's kind of got like a bigger wide angle lens on the whole timeline at this point. And
oh, well, so that's certainly true.
And now she could like...
Yeah, like what, like Mark Brunley said to me one day, he said, you know, like Peter died and then Peter is aware of us today. But did 2,000 years pass between, for Peter, did 2,000 years pass between when he died and his awareness of us today? Probably not. Like, it doesn't, like, and Peter, of course, is, I don't know about his bodily reality
right
now.
Sure.
But it would seem that, at least by the usual teaching of the church, that he is incorporeal at the moment. Uh-huh. But the experience of time for Peter is, who knows? Who knows what that is like?
We'll find out someday.
Yeah. Hopefully.
God willing. I think we might find out. Well, no, I don't know about that. I was going to say we might find out even if we go to hell, but probably not, actually. That might. I don't even know what it's going to be. You probably just aren't even aware of things as much in hell, like other than your own misery.
Yeah. I
don't know. I just don't. Hell's, I don't even want to. I don't want to know about that, actually.
Yeah, because obviously you still have some goods in hell. You still, being is a good.
Right.
Existing.
Well, which goods do you have? Do you have the good of knowledge? Do you have, I mean,
at least a little bit, because you know that you're made for God, and you don't get Him.
Yeah. Right, you have to, because otherwise you wouldn't be able to suffer very much, you know.
But what form does that knowledge take? I mean, yeah. We can know things and still be very confused and disoriented. And
I mean, look at me.
That's a very good point.
All right.
Oh, you want to end on that note? Yeah, I have said three things in the last 20 minutes.
Good place to end.
You want stuff? Because you say you usually just settle the thing. Why didn't you settle it?
No, that's fine. Let's end. Yeah,
Adam, do you have anything else to say? I'd like to invite you to say something else.
I have nothing else. Sorry, thanks for being with us.
Thank you very, very much.
This is Kevin O'Brien of EWTN's Theater of the Word. I'm excited also to teach middle school and high school literature, speech, and drama with homeschoolconnections.com, an online Catholic curriculum provider. Your student can meet with me online for a live, interactive class. Whether you take apologetics with John Martinoni, or grade school with Jackie De La Viaga, or any of the other 400-plus courses with homeschoolconnections.com, online Catholic learning for your homeschooling family is available for you.